Hello and welcome to Coach in Your Corner, powered by Last 20 Sports Conditioning. The goal of this podcast is to show you everything you need to know about sports conditioning. We'll be talking with current players, current coaches, physios, nutrition specialists, and anyone that can help you to become the athlete that you want to be. Today I'm speaking with Jordan Noblett, who's a professional basketball player from America and founder of Athletes with Anxiety. You can find them on Instagram at Athletes with Anxiety.
Hey man.
Hey buddy.
How have you been? How's it out there? Looking like this guy's.
Yeah, no, everything's been good. You know, it's obviously been a little crazy, and not just in our country, but globally with this whole pandemic. And you know, I don't know how it's working over there, but then you factor in that election, because man, I've never seen our country so divided in my life. Is the last couple of years.
Yeah, the news we've been getting over here hasn't looked all the best. Obviously, we don't get the full side of the story, but we just get the media's interpretation. But yeah, it's looked a bit crazy.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, man. It's all media driven. You know, it's you got your groups out here that watch Fox versus CNN or whatever, and everybody just goes at it. It's kind of sad, honestly.
Yeah, we've had similar on the Brexit debate over here, and yeah, all of that going on. So. Yeah, I know what it can be like. It's pretty, yeah. How has it been over there then with the lockdown? How have things been? Have you had a lot of shutdowns? And
yeah, so it's been really ugly. So you have almost each state is almost acting as its own country. So it's up to the governor of that state. So I'm in Arizona. We're pretty open. Things are kind of as usual, except you got to wear masks whenever you go into businesses or whatnot. But they opened restaurants to full capacity, everything. But if you go next door to California, everything's like on lockdown. So it's each state is different, which I personally believe that's kind of why the U.S. is in the position it's been with this pandemic for so long, is because you had everybody operating on different rules, rather than just people getting together and saying, no, let's do this. Like, I have a friend, his wife's from Australia. And he told me, you know, Australia went to a huge lockdown to where you weren't allowed more than certain miles from your house to go to the grocery store. And now it's been all under control for months over there. So we're just, our politics is just like our COVID dealing. We're so divided out here. It's unreal.
Yeah, I've got a friend over in Australia who I spoke to the other day. She's actually in Victoria, so she was in that big 7-month lockdown, I think it ended up being. And we've got pretty much similar here at the moment. We can get back to playing amateur sport on the 29th of March, and then we can shops and gyms and things like that start opening on the 12th of April. So we've had a full national lockdown since 1st of January, and we had a couple of national ones in November and December. So where I live's been in full lockdown since the start of November. So yeah, it's pushing on 5 months now that it's, can't get in the gyms, can't get out. You're only allowed out for a part of the day on your own to go and exercise. So it's been pretty crazy for people.
And you know what? That's what's really tough. I was used to going to the gym every day, but they locked down all the gyms on us. And it was about a year before I was able to get back in the gym, but you have to wear your mask. I can't breathe with the mask on. So I've had to find alternative routes, whether it's hiking or going outside, finding an empty basketball court. They even removed rims from basketball courts out here because they don't want people playing 5-on-5 or anything. So it's all over the place, man.
Yeah, the outdoor tennis courts near me have all been barred off, and that's the most socially distant sport you could probably get.
Right.
Stand at the other side of a court. And
yes, exactly. But yet golf courses are open and people riding carts together. I don't know. It's the whole thing just doesn't make sense to me, you know?
Yeah. How have you kept yourself moving forward then? Obviously looking at the restrictions you've got and working with them, what have you been doing to keep yourself moving forward?
So what I've been doing some reading. Obviously, you know, you watch more movies than you're used to. But as far as like going forward, man, I try and not think about this pandemic like so much. I've kind of distanced myself from the news and just kind of wake up and take every day is just that day. And I try and be as present as possible in that day. Because I notice you get these people, they watch the news all day. the news is never, it never tells you like, hey, everything's great out there. It's, you know, it's always a crappy story, something to get you down. And I just don't want to put that in my head right now. I know what we're dealing with, try and protect myself, my family, my friends. And then as far as personally, just attack each day. What can I do? Okay, I can't go to the gym, so let me go find this basketball court. Let me go hiking with a buddy, or just different ways to kind of keep pushing forward without letting this get me down.
Yeah, I did a podcast with a friend of mine the other day, and he said it was in reference to his injuries, but he said, when I could do something, I did it. And I think that's a great approach that we've had to take through lockdown. Just go and do what you can do. If that means, as you say, going for a hike rather than doing your gym session, go and do it. It still gets that bit in there. And just, yeah, just keep pushing, really. How have you kept other people moving forward then? It's very easy to have your set goals. Yeah,
so I'm trying to kind of instill that in people. Whether it's like, I meditate pretty regularly. I've really got into, I don't know if you're familiar with Alan Watts.
A little bit, yeah.
So I kind of look at a lot of his teachings. Like, there's so many people living in a dread right now. And I had a buddy tell me, he's like, the beautiful thing is none of us are in control. He goes, you could look at that two ways. You can either look at it from like, oh my God, an anxiety standpoint, none of us are in control. Or you could say, hey, no one's in control. I might as well just enjoy the dance. So that's kind of how I'm helping others push forward. I've had some friends, even some ex-teammates as recently as a couple of weeks ago that I lived with that I didn't know they dealt with anxiety. Just like they didn't know I did until I came out about it. And they called me recently, were like, hey man, I'm dealing with this. Like, how do you deal with this? And we get in these long talks. It's like, man, let's just go a day at a time. Everything to me is about a day at a time. And, you know, when we were younger, whether it's in your early 20s, your teens, whatever, you're so in the present, whatever you're doing, you're not thinking about 10 years, 5 years from now, or 5 years ago, you know, in the past. As we get older, I've noticed our thoughts change. We start almost becoming obsessed with the past and future, and we lose our ability to be in the present. So I'm trying to get back to that as an everyday practice, because when you're in the present, you're happy. You're not worried about anything else. Our worries come from our minds going to, you know, what if I lose this job 6 months from now? How am I going to pay my bill? Whatever. So I've really been preaching to people, like, let's just try and lock in on the present.
It's something I've been doing a lot in lockdown as well, and not out of choice. It's just become a thing. And as you say, there's those what ifs, and we always say, what if this happens or what if that, but we never think, what if I do this today and that leads me to where I want to be in a few weeks on or a few months on. Like, we always forget that positive side of the what if, and just straight away put ourselves in if this happens, then it's all going to be doom and gloom.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to get you to quickly introduce yourself fully. So what's sort of your background, where you've come from, and what you're doing now?
Yeah, so you know, my name is Jordan Oblett. I was born in Missoula, Montana, in a college town. I think now there's 125,000 people there. It's not very big. My dad lived in Las Vegas by the time I was in third grade, so I used to go back and forth between my mom and dad. I became real obsessed with sports at an early age. That was always kind of my outlet, whether it was football, baseball, basketball, whatnot. My mom is a brain tumor survivor, so she's actually missing a quarter of her brain. She was not supposed to survive that. So she got that tumor. I was in kindergarten. So I grew up experiencing her having seizures and like losing her hair, everything. My dad would help out as much as he could, but he was in Las Vegas with his family. So I actually took over a lot of anxiety traits from my mom. She's a worry wart, as they say out here. Worries about absolutely everything. That kind of rubbed off on me and I didn't know it. I had my first panic attack my eighth grade year of school. Did not know what it was. I just got up from the dinner table, told my mom, I'm like, I have to go to my bedroom. Like, I don't know what's going on. I'm freaking out right now. And later they ended up telling me, no, you had a panic attack. So from that moment on, I kind of grew up with these things. And I got into high school basketball, did really well there in Missoula, Montana. wound up at a junior college in Northern California, played 2 years there in Quincy, California for a school called Feather River College, a town of like 1,000 people, teeny. So me and my teammates got really close. I got recruited by about 13 Division I schools. I originally committed to the University of Wyoming, and then I went to instead Cal State Northridge. As I took a recruiting trip to Los Angeles, they told me, you know, full ride scholarship. LA totally drew me in versus Wyoming. Wyoming was very much like Montana. I was used to cold weather. I wanted to go somewhere where there's beaches, palm trees. You know, I'm a 20-year-old kid. Went there and dealt with anxiety all through college career. We'll get into that. Got out of college, signed a pro contract to play in Australia, broke my left foot 1 month before I was supposed to go. And I just retired from basketball after that. It was kind of, do I move on with my career or just continue to play basketball, make decent money, but not enough to necessarily, you know, go retire on or anything. So I just went on with my career. I moved out here to Phoenix, Arizona. And I've been, I sell flooring for a living, residential, multifamily, commercial buildings, do a lot of work with those. I've been doing that for about 6.5 years. And then I started Athletes with Anxiety, which I've talked to universities out here. I talked to the University of Texas Tyler. I work with some individual people that are struggling with anxiety in their sports. And I've been on a few podcasts. But that's my true passion. So that's what I'm really pushing. And that's where I'm at today.
Nice, man. It's a good place to start because we've just had Last Chance You start showing over here on Netflix. And I was looking at that. I saw your post the other day about talking about the similarities of it. So I didn't know if you wanted to just quickly dive into your experience with D1 basketball and then also how it does compare to what Netflix are showing us.
Yeah, so since Netflix came out with that, you know, it's a junior college in California that they're documenting. I used to play against those same junior colleges in my junior college in California. And actually, my school's on that documentary. It shows them, I think in 2016, they beat the team they're documenting in the Elite Eight. But I fell in love. I've already seen the series twice because it is spot on my same experience in junior college. You're dealing with kids that grew up with a really rough background. Either they don't have grades, they have attitude problems, and you're navigating through all that. I didn't have grade problems. I didn't have attitude problems. I went to junior college because my high school was pretty loaded. So I only played 1 year of high school varsity basketball. So I was very under-recruited. I went to the junior college to get seen by more colleges. But I had teammates that one of my teammates, he led the state of California in scoring 2 years in a row, could not pass a class to save his life. So he just went overseas from junior college, could not qualify to go to a Division I school. So Last Chance U, that is extremely accurate. It's like watching my own experience. Then I went to the Division I school and in Los Angeles, California, Cal State Northridge. And that was, it was amazing, but I did have to adjust to the structure. So at my junior college, you're really dedicating maybe 3.5-4 hours a day to basketball, nothing crazy. At the Division I level, it was probably around eight hours a day. We do everything, we didn't have a weight room at my junior college, so we didn't lift weights. We got changed in a classroom. We didn't have a locker room. When I went to my Division I school, it was weights at 6 a.m. You do that for a couple hours. Then you go to class. You come back. Practice is like 12 till 3:30. Then after that, you might have one more class while you slide in a meal. Then you have study hall 6 to 9. Then you have film sessions. Like, it's a full-time job. So I did have to adjust to that. It was tough initially, but some of the best times of my life. And basketball is my first love in life, man. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, you say it was like a job. Is that because of a scholarship scheme, or is that just how everyone that wants to be there playing sport has to be
so really full in? So at the Division I level, that's pretty much par for the course. It's almost treated as basketball first, your schooling second, unfortunately. It's a total business. I mean, you're bringing in millions of dollars to the school. They'd tell you, hey, coach, you know, I got this class at this time and it interferes with practice. The coach will straight up tell you, well, you better change the class because you're not showing up late to or missing practice. I mean, it is a straight job. So if you really don't love it, you're probably not going to last because it'll weed you out really quick.
Did you get a lot of support with that change then from family, but also from the school itself to deal with such a big jump?
So my support more came from my family and friends. Unfortunately, one thing that I did learn, and it's part of it being a job and a business at that level, they say there's support, but there really isn't a lot of support. And I've worked with a lot of other athletes, and they tell me from their schools, same scenario. It's kind of window dressing. Oh, we're here. We have these people to help you. But then when you go to get help, you don't get anywhere. There's no answers. It's kind of you're on your own. That really sucks. And that's something I want to change. That's why I want to speak to more universities, because I want mental health to be some, it's just as important as physical health. You know, if I was at that school and tear my ACL, they're getting me into doctors, surgery. Hey, let's get him back. But if I go to them and say, hey, I'm having these like racing thoughts, or I can't stop having panic attacks, or I'm anxious, it's like, well, stop worrying. It's all in your head. You know, it's still kind of in that taboo phase. So when I was in school, I didn't say anything. I internalized all of it. I'd be in the plane. I'd be like soaking wet with sweat, just like, ah, can this plane land already? I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want teammates, coaches, because I thought I would be judged or looked at weird. You know, when I got older and I've talked to my same coaches since, it's quite the opposite. They're like, man, I wish you would have told me. But at that time, we're going back to, you know, 2006, 2007. It wasn't talked about. There was no Kevin Love, no DeMar DeRozan talking about it.
Yeah, it started to creep in slowly here. We're getting a bit more support, especially at the pro clubs. It's now starting to become more of a thing where they've seen that in order to get the best out of anyone, that they do need to be in a good mental state to do that. You can hide all the things in the world and it looks fine on the surface, but yeah, sometimes you just need to push. You need to ask twice, three times, are you okay? Because someone will always just bat it off in the first instance and say, yeah, I'm fine, and move on. It's just a natural reaction. It's just automatic. People just do it. So yeah, it's definitely starting to increase in this sort of networks that we've got here to support. How important do you see that support network coming into schools and then into sports clubs as well to help people?
So I think it's getting there, but I still feel like it's more at a surface level. So now, because it's kind of a hot topic globally, you're seeing universities, oh, we encourage mental health. But I talk to some of these student athletes that I work with independently, and they tell me, yeah, they say that. But once again, you go in to talk to them and there's no real help. So I just want to continue to preach the message, because I think we can really get this going to where there should be a mental health specialist for all athletic departments in every school. I mean, if we don't have our mental, not just in sports, but in life, what good are we? And there's a lot of people, they've never experienced anxiety or a panic attack or depression, but everybody has experienced a day of depression where something happens and they're like, oh my God, I'm in the dumps. And so everyone can kind of get what that feeling's like. Then you take that and magnify it. It's like, yeah, you know, there needs to be help out there, resources. This is a big thing. And I personally think, you know, social media has added to it. We're now in a day and age where we're all on our cell phones. We can be accessed 24/7. Everyone's looking at everyone else's life and saying, oh, well, I'm this, and they have six cars and a big house. I must not be worth anything. That all feeds into it, in my opinion.
Social media is definitely a huge thing. I started reading a book last year called Wabi Sabi, so the Japanese concept of imperfection. And that was really something that changed my mindset, especially with sort of creating content for social media and doing podcasts like this as well. Just to go, right, it doesn't need to be 100% perfect, because nothing is perfect. As long as you're getting the happiness from that process that you're doing, then that's more important than you putting out this Hollywood-style polished article at the end of it.
Exactly.
How do you see the team as a support network? Because I play rugby over here, so there's usually 60 to 70 guys in the squad. That means you speak to the guys that you get close with, but you know you've always got 60, 70 guys on the field in the clubhouse to back you up. Obviously, with basketball, it's a little bit smaller, but how important is that team bond for your support network?
You know, that gets you through a lot of stuff, man. The only thing I'll say about it that was a negative is us as men specifically, we're scared to speak out when we struggle. You know, we try and naturally hide it. We're taught from a young age. This is one of the greatest things I've heard recently was someone said, take a brother and sister that are, let's say, you know, 4 years old. They're walking, both of them fall down. Most likely you're going to hear the parents or whoever else to the girl run over to her and say, oh my God, are you okay? You know, do you need a band and kind of nurture her? With the boy, it's get up, you're okay, you're fine. Like, you know, you're tough. And that really exists. It gets built in our psyche. So even being in a locker room full of, at the Division I, there's about 16 of us. No one speaks about their struggles. We get really close, but there's still that barrier that people don't let in. And then you find out years later, you know, this person was dealing with this. Like I had a teammate, he lost his brother to violence. He lost his mother to cancer. He literally had no one left in his life. He was joking around in the locker room. You wouldn't know. But as I got older, I know behind the scenes, he was probably going through a ton. So I really just want to encourage people to start speaking out. You know, just get it out there. You're going to be judged. We're all judged sooner or later, but there is a huge group of people out there that is a support system yourself. And I mean, you're in London, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. Look what connected us. You know, there's people out there. So the locker room dynamic is tricky, man. I wish I would have spoken up back then, but I was 21 years old. I was too scared, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a great message for anyone that's in that situation to actually just speak up. I mean, I'd much rather be judged by someone that knows why I'm going through something than them just saying, oh, he's having a bad game today. Oh, he can't catch a ball. And like, yeah, there's reasons behind that. And then actually those guys may have been through exactly the same thing. As you say, you've spoken to a lot of teammates that were going through it and they're like, no, I can help you. You can help me. Or going to the coaches and using that network around you. If you just stay quiet about it, then it's just something that's just going to keep going in your head. And then you actually make that worse in your own head because of it.
Yes.
Looking at sort of things that can cause it then, spoke about your panic attacks or your first panic attack, what sort of things can happen in sport that's the sort of trigger it? If that's injuries or selection?
So where I used to really deal with it was I'm one of those people, I'd get really nervous before games. It does not matter how many games I've played in my life. For whatever reason, I start going through like the catastrophe scenario in my head. What if I screw up these plays? What if I can't hit a shot? Like I really go down a negative rabbit hole, which leads me to being extremely anxious. So right before we would take the floor, whether it was high school, junior college, Division I, I would almost get sick to my stomach. Like I can't eat. You know, I might be in the bathroom for a minute. Like I really went through it. Once I was on the floor and the ball tipped, I was completely calm. Because I was in the present. I was no longer thinking about all these scenarios. So, I mean, that has triggered quite a few people is the nervousness before a game, the fear of failure. What one of my coaches taught me to do, and it's helped me a lot, and he was my junior college coach. He didn't know I was dealing with anxiety. He used to use the power of visualization. So the night before games, we'd be at practice and he'd have us all lay down for 5 minutes and visualize playing the game. And he said, this is how powerful this is, guys. He said, if I tell you to not think of a pink elephant, what does your mind do? It thinks of a pink elephant. He's like, stop thinking about negative things because that's what's going to play in your head. So he'd go through this like meditative process where he's like, envision making the shot. You know, you take two dribbles to the left, you pull up, you make the shot. And that stuff works, man, not just in sports, but in your everyday life. And I've learned the power of self-talk. I naturally had a very negative self-talk. It would always go, to what if this goes wrong? What if this goes wrong? That doesn't do you any good. It's, you have to almost just continuously work on yourself. I am strong enough. I'm going to do great. I'm awesome. And that stuff will eventually get in your subconscious. It's big. Visualization is so big with me. It's huge.
Yeah, it's definitely something that works in every aspect. If that's something you want to achieve, even if it's coming down to sort of decorating a room, if you visualize that first, the whole process becomes a lot easier because you've seen how it's going to end up. You've seen what might happen. Yeah. And especially with sport, it's huge. All of those ifs and if this plan doesn't work or if this plan does work, what are we going to do next? It's definitely massive for helping the process, but then, yeah, relieving your own mind of going, no, I've already worked out the solution if this happens, so it doesn't matter that it might happen.
Yep.
What other things can we do if it does happen then? So if an anxiety or a panic attack has happened or we're getting really nervous before the game, obviously we can visualize it. And you said about that self-talk, what sort of things can we do in the moment to help get past that?
So a couple of tips, and one that actually works really well for me even to today is, so if you take your hands and ball up your hands, right, and squeeze as hard as you can, tense up all your muscles, count to five, and then release them, your stress hormones will naturally drop with everything. That's one tool. I'll tell you, your diet is huge. And I love crappy food. Fried chicken to me, I could have it probably every day. But if I eat a bunch of crappy food, I will get more anxious. And in talking to some therapists of mine, I see a psychiatrist, we have more things in our gut that impact our mind than actually our brain itself. So that's huge, is your diet. Water helps. But my main thing is meditation. Work on your breathing. And there's so many exercises. The most simple one is when you inhale, count to four, hold for 4 seconds, and then release for 4 seconds. So it's 4-4-4. You do that for about a minute, even in the midst of a panic attack, you're not going to feel like 0 to 100% better, but you will feel much better. Because that's, I think with panic attacks, that's one thing that drives us all nuts is our breathing gets out of control. Then we start thinking, what am I having a heart attack? You know, your brain goes all sorts of places. So yeah. I get big into all that meditation. I'll go for a walk if I'm at home or at the office. My office, I have a nice area around here. I'll go for a 20-minute walk and I'll kind of quiz myself on the walk. What do I see? What do I hear? I look up, I see a green tree, I see a brown bird. Before you know it, you're kind of in the present and the anxiety has died down.
Yeah, I really like that technique of the sort of five things you can see, hear, smell. It's really good, as you say, bringing you back to the present. And even if it doesn't end that panic attack, you've suddenly got control and you know where you are again. So then you can start doing your other techniques to get you back to that calm level. How can we sort of reduce the risk of getting to that point then? Obviously, the diet you've said, making sure that's really good, and that should be something everyone's doing anyway, especially if you're training for sport. But what sort of things can we do to reduce the risk before that anxiety is going to happen and depression might kick in?
So I neglected, I just assumed if I don't think about it, it'll all go away. I think a lot of people do that. The main thing I think is the moment you start noticing, get help, ask for help. My psychiatrist said, Jordan, of all the mental illnesses, anxiety is easily the most treatable. It is extremely easy to treat. You can live a great life and this thing can be, you'll always deal with it, but it could be a thing that's like way back there. You might deal with it a couple times a year. I just went so long by saying, man, if I just don't think about this, I'll be fine. Eventually it'll go away. So if I could do it over again, the moment I realized what I was dealing with, I would have said, I need to see somebody. I want to talk to someone. Now, you know, you can use vitamins. I actually take a medication once a day. The guy that influenced me to do that was Kevin Love. So I had gone, I'm like, I don't want to be medicated. I'd gone herbs, teas, anything you could imagine that was natural. nothing was really working. I heard Kevin Love in an interview, and he was like, you know, I take a medication, and honestly, I think it saved my life. So with him saying that, I said, you know, maybe I'll give this a shot. And I've been taking a medication, and it's made a night and day difference. Not that that's the answer for everybody, but find out what works for you as an individual. Just because it works for person A, B, doesn't mean that needs to be your path. There is no right answer. There is no wrong answer. But seek help, because I am a firm believer you cannot do this solely on your own.
Yeah, I think definitely seeking help, and as soon as you can do it, because that gives you the chance to experiment and see what works. See, the longer you put it off and you start needing to find that thing to get you back on track, obviously you're then at your darkest point anyway. So what you said about, as soon as you do start noticing it, that's when you should get the help, because it can be a long process. Some people can deal with it in a month. Some people, it takes all their life to deal with it. So yeah. I really like that advice. So keeping our mind healthy, obviously vitamins you said as well. Is there any other things we can do to make sure that our mind's staying healthy, to give us the best protection?
Take social media breaks. As simple as that sounds. I mean, I think there's been some studies recently released saying that people that spend X amount of hours on social media tend to be more anxious or depressed. Because even myself, if I'm on it too long, I find myself comparing myself to other people, like, oh, look at this 26-year-old and I'm 36. This guy's got 6 homes, whatever. It can make you feel like crap about yourself. So I think it's important to take some steps away and get out there and have like real human interaction, because that's just everyone's highlight reel. It's what everyone wants you to see. You know, it's the same as you look at someone. I loved Robin Williams. If we just judge Robin Williams from what we saw of him, we think, oh, this is the happiest guy in the world. We think this is the happiest guy in the world. Little did we know what he was dealing with behind the scenes. So don't read into that stuff. Same with reality television. Like, just don't read into it. So, I mean, I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's obviously difficult as well, isn't it? With lockdowns, trying to get out to see people, but I think in the UK now, you can go and see someone one-to-one. It doesn't have to be exercise, just for social contact. And that has been a recurring theme throughout the lockdowns, that they have provided us with that ability to go and see people when we need it. And I think it's really important to take that, even if it is at the moment only in our local area. So local towns, maybe only sort of 10 miles away, but there's still find that person that you can just go and have a chat to, because just typing and texting, context is lost a lot of the time on text. Someone might not understand that you're actually asking for some help in that text, because they're not seeing the facial expressions and the human emotion that comes alongside it.
Exactly.
So I've been doing a lot of, especially in the first lockdown, I had to get into a lot of habits and routines. I had a massive career change. I was doing a lot of event work before, and obviously they all completely stopped, which is when I fully dived into doing the sports work. And yeah, really had to make sure I had routines in the morning to get myself focused and ready for the day. And that includes having affirmations in there and things like that. Have you got any affirmations that you use particularly?
Yeah. So I actually have yellow sticky notes all over my mirror where I, you know, brush my teeth and everything. And it says things, love yourself, you are good enough. Just little sayings that mean something to me. And then in the main part of my bedroom, I have a whiteboard, and it has not just goals as, you know, buy a house or, but it also has things sprinkled in between them, like love yourself. Your perception is your reality. You never stop having fun. Just little things, reminders for me to read on a daily basis that I feel like is, it's almost like having a good diet for your brain. You don't want to feed your brain, you know, no, you can't, or you suck, or you want to feed it positive messages. And so that's what I use a lot on a daily basis. I have these little reminders everywhere. On my home screen on my phone, I have an app. It's called Motivation, but it's just sayings that say, like, you are good enough, and it changes through the course of the day. You know, you are loved. One of them says, anxiety and depression takes an extremely strong person to endure, and you are that person. So I have that on my home screen, like just constant good stuff I'm trying to put in my brain. So yeah, I'm definitely big on that.
I think they're great, as you say, for feeding your brain with that good energy. We said about the news earlier and how it's just constantly putting the negative. And then if you're also seeing that from a job you might not like or it's getting tough, then you've just got these constant negative thoughts going in. And it's important to replace them with some things that are going to help you along the way. And they don't always need to be the sort of you're strong enough and these sort of affirmations. It may just be simple things like I can do these tasks today because that means in a week's time I can go out and enjoy myself, or I can do this because of this. And yeah, looking into the productivity side and look and really trusting your process that you've put in place to get where you want to be. I find it hugely important in the morning. Just say, get these things done today. It means you can go out and in 3 weeks' time when the lockdown's over, I've got a bit of free time to go and see my friends, rather than in 3 weeks' time I'll be sat there trying to do all this work that I put off because I thought I couldn't do it or thought that it was not so important.
Well, and I think the key is when you get overwhelmed, take everything back to, okay, what do I need to accomplish? What is important? Don't look at everything as, oh my gosh, I have all this stuff. That's where you really get overwhelmed. Break everything down, you know, and try and have fun. Too many people are not, having fun. Have fun in whatever you do. I sell flooring, but I go in our office and I joke around with everyone all day. I have a blast in our office. If I couldn't do that, I'd be miserable.
Yeah, it's a big thing for work. It's something a friend of mine said quite early on. And it's, if you aren't enjoying your job, then try and look for something else or bring it up and make a change. Yeah. You've got to be there for however many hours a day, every day, so that you can do all the things you want to do. You might as well make that time fun and find enjoyment through doing it. There's no point just getting into a job just because you think it's going to earn you a load of money and get you to the top end, because that time doing it is actually making you more unhappy before you even get there.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I, one practice I try and do is I try and do the opposite of what my anxiety wants me to do. And my therapist told me, she's like, no, this is actually a very real practice that you do. You just didn't know it. So when I get really anxious or feel panic coming on, my instincts want to say, go home, crawl in your bed under warm blankets, put on the TV and try and like fall asleep. So instead, I'll do the opposite. Well, I'm going to go outside and go for a walk then. Or, I'm going to call a friend, see if I can stop by and just hang out for an hour. So it's like, because the more you enable your anxiety, the worse it's going to get over time. You gotta kind of fight it. And it has a lot to do with being comfortable getting uncomfortable.
It's very easy to take the easy option, isn't it? That your brain's saying, go and do this. You know that you can go home. Nothing's going to affect you whilst you're there. You're not in bed. You're comfy. It's all lovely. But actually, pushing yourself past that little bit and finding your own comfort zone is where you're going to grow. Exactly. And where when it comes up next time, you go, oh no, I've done this. It's fine. Like, I don't need to have that moment again because I've already been through it. And that's the same with training, with sport. You don't think you can pull that weight off the ground, but until you do it, and then you go, well, that's easy now. I can pull that off the ground every time. Well,
yeah, and it's no different too, is it's not going to happen overnight. You know, just like any sport. And even if you're not in sports, if you're just lifting to stay in shape, nothing happens overnight. It's an accumulation of everything you've done over time. And then you look back and say, man, I've came a long way.
Yeah, well, that's how we grow in muscle and in health, isn't it? We push our muscles to the limit, to the point of stress so that they can't take. They tear, they adapt, and then next time we deal with it, they're ready for it. And the brain is part of that anatomy. So we should be trying to push ourselves that little bit so that we can defeat it the next time it comes around.
Yep.
Another thing alongside those affirmations is gratitude, which is becoming huge now globally. We've seen people really start to look at gratitude. What are your experiences of it and sort of what things do you try and stay grateful for?
Gratitude is gigantic. When I started experiencing really bad anxiety attacks a few years ago, I remember having some days laying in bed and just thinking, man, I wish I could just get up, go to work, do whatever I got to do and come home, watch a basketball game and be okay. It was the most simple things. I didn't want a car, house, anything. So then once I started really getting through it, my perspective is different. So I'm just grateful to wake up and be like, hey, I can get up and go do a job. Instead of looking at it like, man, I have to go do this. It's like, I have the ability and I'm blessed. I get to go do this. Like, I get to live another day. There's so many people passing away on a daily basis globally from whatever, you know, anything, that another day on earth to me, I'm beyond grateful. So that's where my gratitude comes in, especially with my mom having cancer. I'm used to being kind of close to near-death experiences. And so it's like, man, it could be so much worse. Could it be better? Of course, but it could be way worse.
I like that. Yeah, it can always be worse. And next day isn't always guaranteed either. People sort of plan for these big aspirations in 10 years time, but the career path or anything may change in the next few days, next few hours. So it goes back to living in the present and enjoying what you do, because if you're not enjoying those things when at the time that you're doing them, then when you do get the reward out of it, you're still not going to be grateful for it because you've resented the process that's got you there.
Exactly. 100%.
So looking into those routines, goals, and we've mentioned breaking things down into smaller things. How do you deal with your goals and plans? Do you have little outcomes that you want to hit to keep you on that process? Or do you really just try and stay in each day?
So I do try and stay in each day, but I also set little goals that I know if I hit those, I don't need to write the big goal down because the big goal will be accomplished. So I focus more on the little goals rather than the big goal. I think too many people pick a big goal and then they don't know how to get there, or they become paralyzed by the thought of, man, it's going to take all this. When really it's like, no, break it down once again to steps. You accomplish these steps, the big goal will accomplish itself. So that's more what I'm big on, is just little goals. And that it also helps because little goals are just focus on today. What can we do today? If I get a bunch of wins just one day at a time, the next thing you know, it's 6 months down the road. I'm like, oh, I've been, you know, killing it mentally, killing it physically for the last 6 months.
Yeah, having those little goals is something we do in training as well. We break things down into cycles and go, right, we need to hit this by this month. Or if it's weight loss, I always try and, if someone wants to lose a certain amount of weight, then, well, what's the amount we can lose this month? What's the scientifically researched guy, and go, look, 2 pounds this week, 2 pounds next week, rather than going, oh, I need to lose 20, 30 pounds by this time. You go, no, you just need to lose 2 pounds every week. And by the time you get to that point, you'd have lost it anyway. Right. It's just, it's breaking it down. And so, and I find it stops a lot of anxiety because you've visualized all those processes and steps that you need to get there anyway. So, you know, I need to follow this process and I will get to that point. I don't need to worry about that bigger goal at the end of it that seems so far away.
Exactly. Yep.
How do we deal with change then? So if we have got those long-term goals and we're going along those steps along the way, but a big change comes, or let's say an injury or a life change happens, how do we deal with those and go, actually, no, that's all right. That's just part of it. And I can either keep working to that goal maybe, or if my path's completely changed, then I just need to reset and go for that. But well, often change can throw us on it.
Yeah, because we all know change is going to happen. Something is going to happen in our lives that we don't foresee, and it's going to catch us off guard. I think the main key is just deal with that when it comes. So if it's an injury, and I've broken foot, I've broken, you know, wrist, whatever, it's just like, okay, I didn't see this coming. Now what do I have to do to get back? What do I got to do to fix this? You know, you got to do physical therapy, or you got to have surgery, or whatever. And it's just back to that breaking it down. Just, okay, now my focus is this, you know, and I think when you do that, you don't let yourself get overwhelmed. Because if I think, man, I broke my foot, this is going to take 6 to 8 months or 8 to 10 months, that just sounds overwhelming. But if I break that foot and the doctor's like, you'll be back, you'll be as good as new, but we're going to have to rehab this, then I'm just going to immediately think, okay, what do I got to do today? Do I have to ice it? Do I have to go to physical therapy and work it out just one day? Because even in a week, you're like, man, I can move my foot a little more, or, you know, do a little more. It's all about just taking whatever comes to you, dealing with it at the moment, but also don't overreact. in flooring, for example, I talk to my father regularly. Sometimes I'll have a stressful moment and he'll say, hey, relax. No one's going to die because they didn't get their flooring today. It's perspective. You know, you're alive, you're healthy. You'll be okay, most likely, whatever happens.
Yeah, it's stuck in those what ifs, isn't it? So we immediately go to, oh, what if I can never play again? What if that's my career over? And you're like, well, what if you do all of these steps and you're better than you were before? What if you go through this process and you find a better path anyway out of it? And people often forget those sides. But I think, it's definitely something that's come up a lot in this chat. And yes, it's really just break it down, get those steps right, be happy in each day and keep working slowly. Even if it's a little bit towards the goal, it's still a little bit. Everyone seems to have a time span that they think they have to fit into. They've got to have kids. They've got to have a house by this time. And we're judging that based off of people that lived to 70 and we're now living to 100. And
life isn't a race, you know? Like, we all have our own path. Some people become a millionaire at 20. Some of the most successful people in the world didn't even get successful until they were 45, 50 years old. I mean, we're all on our own path. You are a true one of one. There's not another one of me. There's not another one of you. You're going to walk your own path. And that's that.
Yeah. I was covering some great stuff today, Jordan. A lot of things people are going to really find helpful from us, whether they're athletes or just general population and just doing a bit of fitness and need some help with anxiety. So thank you hugely for giving up your time today and jumping on for the call. I just wanted to finish with your number one tip for athletes mainly on it can be on anything at all. Just your one tip for an athlete that's say at the position you were in junior college or maybe even in the 20s, 30s, actually still wanting to play, still playing to a good level.
So my number one tip is it's actually a two part, and I'm gonna say believe in yourself and do not give up, as generic as that sounds. If you're persistent enough, specifically in sports, good things will happen to you. I've seen it a billion times. People think it's all ability. Oh, this guy's gifted like this. I could name just as many guys that aren't gifted, but mentally, they're like, no, I'm going to do this. Like, this is going to happen. And they make it happen. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, I really like them. I think that's great. Great advice for anyone that in their jobs, in their work life, in their sporting life. Yeah, just keep that persistence, because if you've put that plan in place and you've set that and you know that goal is going to make you happy, then why would you let little things get in the way and start being lazy towards what you know is eventually going to make you happy and what you want to be at?
Yep.
Great stuff, man. Yeah, thank you so much for jumping on again. Hopefully we can have some more chats in the future.
Definitely, I would love to, man.
Hopefully when the world's in a bit more of a normal place and we can revisit some of these topics and how we can help each other when we can get out and see each other.
For sure. I would love that.
Definitely. Awesome stuff, Jordan. Thank you very much for jumping on, and I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for jumping on to the Coach in Your Corner podcast. If you found this useful, we'll be doing these every week, so please subscribe. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Last 20 Sports Conditioning.